I'm going to read this morning text 36. Canto 3, chapter 29. Explanation of devotional service. So the explanation that we heard yesterday was that mystic yoga, Prabhupada added the adjective mystic yoga, bhakti and yoga. So bhakti yoga and mystic yoga, they're actually one and the same. And what that means is when in the mature stage, the mystic yoga process, if properly performed, leads to the bhakti yoga process. And that's with a big assumption at the front end. That's that there's some association of a devotee, because without association of one carrying bhakti, one can't receive it. But if properly practiced, the application of the principles of the mystic yoga system lead to bhakti yoga. And with this process, applying the process properly as described in earlier verses, the message was purusha, purusham vrajet. The living entity enters into the kingdom of God to be with the supreme purusha. We discussed a lot of things, but that's a little summary. So text 36. Etad Bhagavato Rupam, the form of Bhagavan. Brahmana Paramatmanaha Param Pradhanam Purusham Daivam Karma Vicheshtitam. This Purusha, whom the individual soul must approach, is the eternal form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known as Brahman and Paramatma. He is the transcendental chief personality, and his activities are all spiritual. Purport. In order to distinguish the personality whom the individual soul must approach, it is described herein that this Purusha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the chief amongst all living entities and is the ultimate form of the impersonal Brahman effulgence and Paramatma manifestation. Since he is the origin of the Brahman effulgence and Paramatma manifestation, he is described herewith as the chief personality. Guess what verse he's going to quote? Nityo Nityanam, right. Katha Upanishad, Nityo Nityanam. It is confirmed. There are many eternal living entities, but he is the chief maintainer. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita also, where Krishna says, Aham Sarvasya Prabhava, I'm the origin of everything, including the Brahman effulgence and the Paramatma manifestation. Little extra editing in there, but he's part of everything. His activities are transcendental as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Janma karma chame divyam. The activities and the appearance and disappearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are transcendental. They are not to be considered material. Anyone who knows this fact, that the appearance, disappearance, and activities of the Lord are beyond material activities or material conception, is liberated. Pretty powerful. We know those things. How come we struggle? Ye yo veti tatvataha chatvadeham purnar janma. Such a person, after quitting his body, does not come back again to this material world, but goes to the Supreme Person. It is confirmed here, that's the yesterday's verse, purusha purusham prajet, the living entity goes to the Supreme Personality, Godhead, simply by understanding his transcendental nature and activities. Well, Prabhupada did a fantastic job doing a little overlay between this, you know, Bhagavatam verse and Bhagavad Gita verses. Naturally, there's symmetry. There's not a different message. But so the message of Bhagavad Gita is sufficient. That doesn't mean so we don't need to read Srimad Bhagavatam, or we just read Srimad Bhagavatam, we don't need to read Bhagavad Gita. Both are recommended. Both are transcendental information about transcendence, information about Krishna. And one is Krishna speaking, another is speaking about Krishna. The source is Krishna, ultimately. Even the Bhagavatam, Krishna is the source, because Krishna is the source of everything. And Krishna is the source of the Vedas. And Krishna discloses the Vedas to Brahma and to others. But Krishna is the source. And he's disclosing himself. And from the previous verse, there were two out of four paragraphs that Prabhupada was emphasizing meditation upon this. In this mystic yoga process, there's a process of meditation. That's Satya Yuga. But meditation upon what? Or meditation upon who? And not something impersonal or void. So similarly here, this it's explicit. The person, the purusha whom the individual soul must approach, is the eternal form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here the Bhagavatam is making it very easy in case somebody doesn't know. Because there are, if there isn't proper source of knowledge, then how is one going to know? Or you can't, because you can't imagine the form of the Lord. It's not a form to be imagined. It's something that's disclosed. So we have to hear the scripture. That helps the attention go properly to the Supreme, the object, the emphasis in the verse, at least the way the Prabhupada is delineating it, is that this the Paramatma and Brahman feature of the Supreme Lord, they are aspects of the Supreme Person. Yeah, right in the verse. Brahmana paramatmanaha. Within the Bhagavatam, there's some very special verses out of the 18,000 verses. There's the Chaturshloki verses. And that's like the essence of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. From those four, the other verses of the Bhagavatam come. There's another governing verse that comes very early in the text, the Mahavakya. It's an interesting point or principle or notion that a Mahavakya is something that comes towards the beginning. It governs in Brahma Samhita. The very first verse is that Mahavakya. He points, Jiva Goswami in his commentary on Brahma Samhita, he points to the Mahavakya of other texts. There's a Mahavakya of nectar, devotion, or a principal utterance in similarly in Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. Ete Changsa Kala Pungsa. That is to say, of all the different forms of the Lord, because in that chapter 3 of Canto 1, forms of the Lord, the question was asked, what are the forms of the Lord as they appear in this world? And so there's a short list, not an exhaustive list. And it starts with the Purusha avatars, because the others are avatars of Vishnu. They descend as avatars of Vishnu. And Krishna is in the list. And of the list, within the list, Krishna says, of all these mentioned, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna is the source of all of them. And so many other statements are made. A rule for a Mahavakya is that whatever other things are said subsequently, the proper understanding must conform with that one. If you have another understanding than that one, you have to adjust the other understanding. It has to conform with it, because it's like an emperor that rules many kings. And the kings better conform. But they have a problem. So, from a point of scholarship, any way that we might understand anything else in the Bhagavatam, we must understand it from Krishna is in his Swayam Bhagavan, in his original feature of Bhagavan, as Krishna. He's the source of all the avatars, and in turn the source of everything. And that means that everything has sambandha, has a relationship with the source. If you don't have a source, just thinking about the question yesterday evening, some of you were at the university program, one fellow in the front, Indian background, asked, you know, why must there be God? Why not just karma? Is it karma mimamsa notion? You know, why do you have to have God in the picture? Just do good work and get good results. Why does there have to be God in the picture? And there he was. I mean, he's attending the program knowing we're going to talk about God, but he's asking the question. And I was thinking about it afterwards in relation to this verse in particular, that supposing you just don't have an idea that there's a source of everything, then you're an atheist. And if you're an atheist, you can have this view that just do good work. It doesn't really matter. Interesting. It's not a new idea. Jaimini had the same idea. Krishna spoke the same idea to his father, because it obviously was present during Krishna's time. At least Krishna was aware of the karma mimamsa philosophy. And it's just like there isn't a source of everything. Or another one beside the karma mimamsa philosophy is another atheistic philosophy is Kanada or Vaisheshika's notion that everything is atoms. It's quite similar. Yeah, the smallest reducible particle of matter is the atom, and that's all there is. I mean, that's even further out. That's not, you know, whether they're spirit or not, is all there is matter, and the laws that govern matter. That's all there is. That's not a new one. Mechanistic science says the same thing. So if there's a source of everything, if there's a source of everything, then what's the source of everything? And how can it be that there's everything without a source? It's really silly. Big philosophers that have big followings, and everything comes from what? Well, the law of karma is supreme. Where did the law of karma come from, and who governs it? And where does matter come from, and who determines the laws of matter and operates the laws of matter? Well, you don't have to have something. It's just primordial. It's just matter and the laws governing matter. That's God. Your idea is there's got to be somebody who created that. We just, our view is there's just that. That's God. That from which everything comes. It's matter and the laws governing matter, or karma and whether there's God or not. Somebody administering the law or not. Just there's laws governing the universe. So do good work. So the Bhagavatam is commentary on Vedanta Sutra, which starts by asking the question, what is it from which everything comes? Janmadyasayataha. What is it from whatever that is? That's the absolute truth, because everything else is dependent upon the absolute. The relative truths dependent upon the absolute truth. So what's the absolute truth? So this verse is saying that absolute truth is a person who has form. And the negative people say no, because as soon as you have form, you've limited. Because they're thinking of form like our form. Form is limiting. And the absolute is unlimited, so you can't have, the absolute has to have no form. Without, so the problem is ignorance. And ignorance, the nature of ignorance, we could speak a little bit about this evening, and, you know, the role of transcendental knowledge, which you asked for that. So, the role of transcendental knowledge is it dispels ignorance. And part of ignorance is knowledge becomes covered by ignorance. And when knowledge becomes covered by ignorance, even we could see the Supreme Person face to face. Like, you know, a person saw Krishna, but they didn't see Krishna. They saw something according to their ignorance. And similarly, we can be in direct contact with Krishna in the form of the holy name or the form of scripture, just like, you know, people, but the different renderings of Bhagavad Gita, just for example. I forget the number that Prabhupada said. How many different translations of Bhagavad Gita during his time? Over 100 or something like that? Whatever the number. And he explained why he's adding another one to the so many, because one lady came and said, can you recommend a translation? He said, no. Although so many, 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 and each one so many, 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 it's a covering of Krishna, and another covering, and another covering, and another covering. So some, it's especially related to the previous verse, that the system of yoga and the system of bhakti, they connect when yoga is properly performed. And given the explanation from previous chapters, Prabhupada makes reference to it in the previous verse of the yogi in when he's practicing his meditation, he's to fix his mind upon the Supreme Lord, starting with his lotus feet and, you know, etc. But there's form for Paramatma, and that meditation of form of Paramatma can lead to a personal realization, just like with Dhruva. The Lord came and they spoke. He spoke to the Lord spoke to him. That's personal. He came on the back of Garuda, his carrier. So the Paramatma-led realization, Paramatma meditation, led to Bhagavan realization, because he was, his teacher was Narada, and Narada was, is the giver of bhakti. So even the process was the meditation and apparently Paramatma, the form of Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu came in person. So the Paramatma feature meditation leads to Bhagavan realization if properly guided. And mentioned also is that there's the Brahman feature. Brahman feature is the effulgence, and the effulgence of the Supreme Lord has as its foundation or basis or pratishtha is the person. Just as Krishna says at the end of chapter 14, Bhagavad Gita, I am the pratishtha of Brahman, like the sun, and then the sunshine. And sunshine comes from the sun. The brilliance of the sun, shine, comes from the sun. And from the sun, the basis of the sun is the sun god. The Bhagavan feature is the basis, which is the Bhagavatam's message, which is the message of this verse. And if one has an understanding, explained in the purport, if one has an understanding of the Paramatma and Brahman feature, and everything else having as its source the Supreme Person, one who understands that engages in devotional service. So that's what the verse says in Bhagavad Gita 10.8. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti matva, thus knowing iti matva vajante mam. You engage in devotional service. But for devotional service there must be a person. There's the servant and the servant, the person who is being served, and the process of service. There's diversity in the realm of absolutes, which for a person in ignorance, well, you can't have that. You got to have a Brahman. You got to have no personality and no individuality, and because they're ignorance blocks the conception of that which is spiritual. To see it as spiritual, you see it as not spiritual. That which is spiritual, due to the influence of ignorance, is seen as not spiritual. And that's the nature of, if you consider carefully, it's the nature of offenses. I mean, I'm going to explain this again this evening a little bit, but when we chant the holy name, we're advised to avoid the 10 offenses. And if you analyze a little carefully, doesn't each one of the 10 offenses is seeing something that's spiritual as material. Every one of them. Ignorance. And ignorance blocks us from seeing spiritual as spiritual. We see it as material. And to do that, it leads to offense. So we need transcendental knowledge to remove ignorance so we can at least have the opportunity of becoming free from offense and becoming free from suffering. We need the process, but we also need transcendental knowledge. We need to chant. We also need to know what it is that we're chanting. And the purpose behind the process is not so I can remove the reactions of sin so I can go on sinning or something like that. Because like that particular offense, those are to see the chanting of Hare Krishna as a karmakanda practice. This karmakanda practices include when you do a karmakanda ritual or activity, within it there's some means of counteracting any mistakes that be made during the karmakanda ritual. You know, a form of atonement for a mistake that's made when performing duties or rituals or anything. And the holy name is not that. To see that is an offense. It's fully transcendental. It's meant for something far more than the antidote for our sinful activity. The Bhagavatam is disclosing Bhagavan. That's why it's the Bhagavat Purana. It's the Purana in relation to Bhagavan. Bhagavat Purana. There's the book Bhagavat and there's the person Bhagavat revealing Bhagavan. Within Bhagavan is Paramatma and Brahman. They're subsets. That is to say, in other ways, he's the source. In his Bhagavat Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami has a long section in his classic way of repeating things in so many different angles. They're all different, but in this way, and that way, and the other way, and the other way, and the other way, to finally you're like, all right, I get it. Which says, in the Vedas, whenever the word Brahman is used, it's implicit that it's referring to Bhagavan. You don't have light without a source of light. You don't have, the morning, the light of the morning sun coming into the room if the sun hasn't risen. It doesn't happen. To say, oh, the sun's in the room. The light of the sun is in the room means the sun is up, etc. And he doesn't give those kinds of examples. He gives scriptural explanations. So it's not a problem that the Upanishads speak of Brahman for one who understands, the big picture of what the Vedas are doing. The Vedas are disclosing Krishna or the Bhagavan. Although it's using the word Brahman and Brahman and Brahman, it's disclosing Bhagavan. And it's indirect. Okay, here's direct. And direct is much easier to understand than indirect. One of the things that we covered in the Tattva Sandarbha seminar, the Puranas and Itihasas, they're better because they're direct. The other ones can be misunderstood and you're left scratching your head or reaching a wrong conclusion and, going about with the wrong conclusion. Well, we already have a wrong conclusion. We don't need another wrong conclusion to replace that wrong conclusion. What's the right conclusion? What's the message of the Vedas? What's the source of everything? Source of everything is a supreme person with a transcendental form, and his abode is likewise transcendental, his activities are likewise transcendental, and that Nityo Nityanam, the supreme living entity, is maintaining and is the support and the shelter and the rest of all other entities, whether living entities or matter or Shaktis. He's the basis and support of everything. Supremely powerful. Supremely intelligent. Supremely beautiful. Supremely transcendental. Filled with variety, although of the absolute nature. With the process of mental speculation, one isn't going to come to, one cannot come to that conclusion. Because definition by negation leads you to this other place. There's no qualities and no form. Because one is seeing those things as material. The process of mental speculation, even if carried out for millions and millions and millions and millions of years, it's just the mind can't reach into that realm of transcendence. You can't imagine transcendence. But the transcendence can be disclosed. And that's what the Bhagavatam is doing. Kapila Dev is giving both the means and the end. Again, Purusha Purusham Vrajat, you go back to Godhead. And he's giving the means so that there's clarity. Okay, any thoughts, discussion? Yeah.
Thank you, Raj. You mentioned about offenses and the mentality of treating something spiritual as material.
Mm.
And I notice I have a question sometimes about our advertising of come enjoy, come be happy with this chanting or with this dance.
Chant and be happy.
Right, and if this is fostering in people an offensive mentality.
No. People want to enjoy. And it's the platform of real enjoyment. Now, their idea of enjoyment is a material idea of enjoyment. We're not promising them material enjoyment. We're promising them enjoyment. Chant to be happy. And we're also promising, as, let's say, you know, Kleshagni is the first of the six activities of devotional service, pure devotional service. Even in the sadhana stage, it relieves one of misery. So chant and relieve yourself of your material miseries. It's not false advertising. The innate misconception that someone is carrying, they're going to apply that innate misconception to anything that you might say. Whatever you might say. So we're not responsible for their innate misconceptions. We're responsible for presenting truth, and it's true. It's like the advice that Prabhupada gave about distributing books, at least one time. He said, whatever it is that somebody has an interest in, you can show them that the perfection of that interest is found in this literature.
Actually, you quoted this Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. We also quote the same to establish Krishna's Dream Personal to Godhead. But whereas in Bhagavatam, so many places, so many times this Bhagavan is used for so many people. Maitreya, Narada. So, actually I felt it has really diluted Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam.
So you should go admonish Vyasadev. Vyasadev made a mistake.
No, I'm not telling you he made a mistake.
Oh, well then what are you telling?
Because, Maharaj, you know, when we present Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, exceptionally we bank on this line, actually. But, for example, Maitreya, I
understand the application. So what's the message? Is the message Vyas made a mistake? What's your message?
My question is, what is that, again and again...
How do we correctly understand, why did Vyasadeva do that?
Yes.
That's your question?
Yes.
Good question. Just a little sharing from something we did. This at Sandarbha seminar is like, I spent so many hours preparing for this. Probably 300 hours. So it's like, I'm going to be, you know, seeing things through that lens for quite a while, I think. The means of proof, pramana, has generally three. Madhvacharya, you know, pratyaksha, anuman, and shabda. So of we use all the time. As it built into this question comes, you know, we're using our reason and logic. But if our reason and logic do not match with shabda, then we subvert it, or we just, like, you know, push it to the side. So there is a reason, and yes, there's possibly some confusion. Yes, there's possibly some confusion if Bhagavan is used in different ways than the absolute ultimate way. But like that's the emperor that rules many kings. The word Bhagavan has a generic use and it has a very specific use. The generic use is one who's possessing bhagas. That's Bhagavan. So persons may be considered Bhagavan. They're possessing opulences, great opulences, transcendental opulences. But there's one who possesses all transcendental opulences in full, that's not Narada or Maitreya. Like, you know, calling the living entity Purusha. We're enjoyment-seeking persons because we're part and parcel of the Supreme Parama Purusha. So the message of the Bhagavatam needs to be understood in the context of the whole picture, or even simply the governing verse that governs all the other verses. We must understand that way. So if Narada and Maitreya are being called Bhagavan, it cannot mean that they're equal to Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, because Swayam Bhagavan Krishna is the source of everything, and they're not. So how is it to be understood, or how is it being used? They're possessing great opulences in the generic sense, not in the absolute sense. Hey, it'd be easier if Vyasa didn't do that. We just like have there's whatever you because that's how we were trained in as I was trained in Krishna consciousness. Bhagavan means Krishna. Wherever you see Bhagavan it means Krishna, then suddenly these other applications, and Prabhupada explained it. Generally, Bhagavan is used exclusively for the personality of Godhead, but sometimes in the generic sense Bhagavan is used for a great person. Yes.
This question comes from my conversation with my dad, who has read a lot of impersonal things in his life.
Okay.
So he liked bhakti, but his idea of bhakti was a common Hindu idea of bhakti, that you would do bhakti towards Supreme Person to achieve liberation.
Okay.
So then he got attracted towards this idea of bhakti, which we do, and I said, you know, our bhakti is eternal, we want to do bhakti. In the spiritual world, bhakti is mean, bhakti is end. He liked that idea. And then I said, if that idea is true, then there has to be Supreme Personality of Godhead as eternal, because that's the object of bhakti. So Supreme Personality of Godhead has to be eternal. So then he would say that I can accept it, but that still doesn't mean that the one person is the source of everything. You know, God is an entity which has an impersonal form, it has a personal form. The guys who do bhakti, they worship him eternally. There may be others doing other things eternally. How do you prove that a Supreme Person is the source of everything? And also, does it matter if I follow this conception? That, you know, impersonal and personal both ever exist, and I am on this side and people on the other side. Does it matter? Am I still fine?
Well, none of these things are proofs, that's one thing. other than shabda. I mean, the logic of what, you know, as a, you know, out of n number of possibilities, what your father said is it's a possibility. Now, how do you know what's truth? It comes back to this, you know, what's pramana? What's the means of knowing something? And we accept, with use of logic and reason, Jiva Goswami points this out, using logic and reason, we can say, shabda is the best. That's the best way of knowing. Or we rule out the other two by logic and reason. But so ultimately, that logic and reason that we use could be fallible, and you know, maybe we got the wrong conclusion and something like that. Ultimately, there's an element of faith in the statement of the Vedas. We accept the Vedas with some faith. It's not just logic and reason. We can give all kinds of, and someone else has another logic, and they fight against each other, this logic against that logic. Our experience is everything rests on a person. So, it's just in practical matters. Wherever there's something that's powerful, behind that something that's powerful, there's a person. It's kind of like, you know, the intelligent design argument, for example. Where did all this complexity come from? It's an intelligence. It's by inference. But that's not proof. If father is asking for proof, the proof is in shabda. Because the mind can't go there and the senses can't go there for transcendence. It's beyond the mind and beyond the senses. So we're relying upon shabda to know that which is beyond the mind and senses. And if he doesn't wish to invest faith in shabda, then he'll never know. He'll still just be looking at possibilities for anybody, not just your father. So now, on the basis of shabda, like this Mahavakya of the Bhagavatam, there's the Bhagavan feature is supreme amongst all of the features of transcendence. That is, just like this verse, Paramatma and Bhagavan. Paramatma and Brahman are features of Bhagavan. Well, how do we know that? Not by reason and logic. Maybe there's some other possibilities. Maybe there's a whole bunch of other things up there in transcendence, and we just pick our favorite one. And there's nothing that's the source of everything. That's a possibility. You know, there's people that hold that possibility. There's people that hold all kinds of things. Take a Buddhist philosopher, or Nyaya, or there's people that hold all kinds of things. So how do we know? You keep moving your head, and I'm trying to make eye contact with behind you. Just move over this way, or move over that way. Okay, good. Faith is intrinsic to the soul, and faith is reposed somewhere. So for us, there's faith, it's with reason and logic. There's faith in the Vedas, and amongst the Vedas, there are the best amongst the Vedas, and so forth. This Tattva Sandarbha, just have them play back the recordings or read the book. they're not necessarily going to agree. There may be some other options for somebody that's accustomed to speculation and not accustomed to accepting the ascending authority of Shabda Praman. And, you know, indeed, there are philosophers that say they accept the Vedas and come with other conclusions. Not only Shankaracharya. There's persons that don't agree with Shankaracharya. They come up with other conclusions and say they accept the Vedas. There's other darshans or other renderings of what the Vedas say. And your father may have read so many of them, and he's kind of got a mix of so many of them in his system. So it's really hard for him to select one amongst the many that are in his system. But if how to convince him? It's you know, how do you take away the impressions that are there from exposure to, you know, speculations into transcendence? It's not easy, but the best is continued presentation of transcendental sound vibration from disciplic succession. Let him read Srimad Bhagavatam along with the other things that he reads. Let him just read Srimad Bhagavatam. It's, you know, he may come to that stage, because that's how those impressions stored from so much other exposure can possibly become dispelled by the floodlight of transcendental knowledge of the Bhagavatam.
And the second part is, you know, like in the previous state, if he is not accepting Supreme Personality of God as eternal, bhakti is not eternal, the really devotional service hasn't started. But in this state, where he's saying personal, impersonal both exist and I worship person with my bhakti, what's the drawback? What's the problem with this?
The problem with?
With this idea that I worship Supreme Personality of Godhead.
With the idea of becoming one with him.
No, I worship him eternally, but I don't know for sure whether he is the source of impersonal truth. I don't know. Personal, impersonal, both can exist at the same platform.
So if one has a doubt, he's not barred from performing devotional service. what the problem is, if there is such a, you know, I don't know for sure, but I want to practice devotional service considering that it's eternal. I just don't know if Brahman is also coming from that source. Then, you know, then where is Brahman coming from? Is there a competitor God or a competitor source of everything? Right, that was one of the arguments that the Yamadutas, when they went back to Yamaraj, that was like they were lodging a complaint. You sent us on this fool's errand. And we were stopped by somebody, and it appears that they were very, very beautiful beings. And it appears that there's like another supreme. And that can't be. How can there be two supremes? We thought you were supreme. Who stops death? But these fellows, they stop death. So it would be quite contrary if there's more than one supreme. Could you clear us up for us, please? You think that we're qualified? And that's the Yamadutas. So it's not reasonable. It would be quite contradictory. Very, very not only confusing, but, you know, how are you going to reach the goal if there's multiple goals? What's the goal? Is there a source of everything? And if there's a source of everything, then that everything, that source of everything, that's like how Prabhupada took this verse, Aham Sarvasya Prabhava. Sarvasya means everything. In Baladev's commentary, he says matter and spirit. Everything. The Brahman is also in the category of spirit. So there's a source of everything. So I'm not, if your father takes the position or somebody takes the position, well, I'm not sure there is a source of everything. Then how is bhakti eternal? And who is the object, or what is the object of bhakti? There is a supreme person who is the source of everything, including Brahman, and the means of reaching him. That's the nature of the object of bhakti. Or say go back to the purport of text, the last verse of text, chapter 7. Prabhupada explains that bhakti is applicable for the supreme source of everything. You should be respectful to all, but you must serve the supreme. Bhakti is appropriate. The service to the supreme is appropriate for the supreme. So the concept of I'll do eternal bhakti, but I'm not sure yet if that object of bhakti is the source of everything, including this impersonal Brahman, then it's not, you know, it's not the supreme. There's something else that's the source of this, of everything. Perhaps even, you know, that whoever he's thinking he's worshipping. It's contradictory. It's not like you need to, he should stop, or you should advise him to stop his idea of devotional service to Krishna, but it's a misconception. And where there's misconception or ignorance, then there's going to be offense. You know, better that there's some effort to help clear the offense by knowledge. But you can't force that with somebody that has so many other conceptions of impressions. Dealing with impersonalism takes time. It's like really complicated. You have something?
Yeah, I was wondering, I see when you were saying that when it says Brahman in the Vedas, that really means Krishna.
Jiva Goswami said.
Yeah, I could see a yogi contesting that. And
it's implied.
Is that the Vedic proof, or is there other?
Well, there's many, many. And, you know, you read Bhagavad Sandarbha and you'll find many. And then he's not lazy. He says, here's some other ones that other people say, it says something else. He takes it on. Said that they have a misunderstanding, here's why. And then here's 10 or 15 other references that show it should be understood this way, not that way. But, so it's very complex. Very comprehensive. I'm just stating it very simply. It's very lengthy, very complex, very exhaustive. Wherever there's light, there's a source of light. Basically, that's what he's saying. Okay. Yes.
This thing is like when I hear something or read something, like I just quote the information and think, okay, I know this. So it's very tough for me to go back and hear or go back and read. So can you suggest something, like how could I move from that?
Are you saying if something is said once, your mind doesn't want to hear it repeated?
I already know that.
Okay, so you don't want to hear it repeated. Maybe. That's going to be, let me go to something new.
Yeah.
That's what, okay. The there's a, that one of the rules of sadhana, Prabhupada points to this, it's from Patanjali Yoga Sutras, that there's something that qualifies as sadhana, and one element is repetition. And there's a reason for repetition. So when you read something, the reason for reading it again and reading again and reading again is it helps penetrate through, repetition helps penetrate through the covering of ignorance. Because when you first read that something, you weren't in an enlightened state. You're, well, most of us are in a covered state. So when we read it, we didn't properly understand it. We understood something. And then again and again, just like why we chant the same mantra again and again. Or read the same thing again and again. The repetition is necessary to penetrate through the darkness of ignorance. Because we didn't get it the first time, nor the second time, nor the 100th time. Slowly through purification, especially not even once you get it, then you don't have to hear it again, because you know the tendency to become again covered is still there. It's residual tendency. So we need to continue to hear and continue to hear. And if you do that, do it that way, then the understanding, quite likely, will come through again and again. But like, here's a for example. For example, have you had the experience in reading Bhagavad Gita more than once? Or passages of Bhagavad Gita more than once? Yes. And when you read the second time, third time, or however many times, do you have you had the experience that, oh, I didn't notice that before? Yeah. And then and there's a reason for it. Krishna is ever fresh. But there's another reason that our condition is covered. We don't see everything. We don't see Krishna in his fullness, even in sound vibration. So there's a reason for repetition, when Prabhupada says something and then says something, or the Bhagavatam says something and says something and says it again. There's a purpose. The repetition has a purpose because the impressions that we have, and then therefore the conceptions that we're carrying, are covering Krishna. So the light of Krishna comes and comes and comes again, and the repetition is to get through that darkness of that covering. And then we can see Krishna properly, understand Krishna properly, and relate to Krishna properly. Keep going.
So like when I hear it like again, I just feel that like my mind just like
shuts down.
Yeah.
It closes. So you have a little conversation with your mind. My dear mind. I understand. Just like you might talk to your son. I understand how you feel. And then you repeat back to your mind. You feel that I've already heard this. What? But, my dear mind, there's something about material conditioning that you're also affected by. And that is, you're not an instrument that allows me, who's covered by you, to see Krishna. So my dear mind, please don't get restless. Please hear nicely. What do you think? No, I don't want to hear nicely. My dear mind. Manashiksha. There's a, you know, books where exalted devotees are giving instructions to their mind. So you may have to, you know, my dear mind, just you can sit down over here and I'm going to listen. And you may whine and you may make noises and kick and sputter, but I'm going to listen. because I want to have a clear understanding, a very unobstructed relationship with Krishna here. That's what I want. So that's the example. Neglect the mind. How do you manage with your chanting? Because you've already heard that mantra before.
Lately, I've been just seeing that. I just pray that it is instruction of my spiritual master. I have to do it.
Well, that's a good beginning. But then, what was the instruction intended for? And the instruction intended for, see that. What's the purpose behind the instruction? I'm covered. I'm not enlightened soul. I haven't realized my relationship with Krishna yet. So my faith in the instruction is because I trust the purpose behind the instruction. It will be met. So then let that be operative, in addition to the obedience to instruction. Aspire for the purpose. Intention. When intention is clear, this is a little discussion with Vaisheshika Prabhu that I'm sharing. Where intention is clear, then attention will follow. It's a play on words. But where intention precedes attention. So if one chants dutifully without clarity about intention, it's hard to be attentive. But attentiveness is essential for overcoming offenses. So what's the purpose of this valuable instruction? And my mind is saying, I've heard that. Let's give me something different. The restlessness of the mind. Your son may say, but mommy, I cleaned my room last week. Okay, thank you. But now look at this room. Let's clean it again. Go ahead.
When you said that
attention follows intention. So first, it's a very important part of any spiritual practice, even aside from Hare Krishna mantra chanting. Any spiritual practice. Intention. Purposefulness of doing what we do.
When you said that I'm just following, that I'm chanting because I just pray every day that I have to chant, it is instruction. That is an instruction, so I'm following it.
But
when you say that the intention behind it, you mean that, why saying to chant?
Well, why is that instruction given, that you're being obedient to follow? What's the purpose behind the instruction? One of the you've read Nectar of Instruction? Yeah. So one of the six faults or six activities that Shadvir Bhaktir Vinashati, that destroys bhakti, is if I neglect the vidhis, or I simply follow the vidhis without understanding the purpose behind the vidhis. Because bhakti is meant to be awakened by those vidhis. That's the purpose. That's the purpose. So let me understand the purpose. It's seeing something that's spiritual as material. It's That's the problem. That's ignorance. I see something spiritual as material. And to see that way is because I'm covered. So now, Om Agyana Timarandasya, the prayer to this generic spiritual master is one who removes that covering of ignorance, forces my eyes open with the torchlight of knowledge. I can't just keep my eyes closed. The light is too bright. So the knowledge is the name or the message of the scripture, Bhagavad Gita, wherever, is Krishna. So, oh, I've already seen Krishna. Can I see something else? Well, I haven't seen Krishna yet. I didn't even hear the message properly the first time or the second time. So I continue to go to that place. We go before the deity and worship the deity, not like, oh, I've seen that deity, let me see another deity. The object of transcendence is to be repeatedly seen because it will help us overcome, penetrate the darkness of ignorance and see Krishna properly. And therefore the scripture repeats things deliberately, knowing our condition. You have something?
Yes.
Yes.
I think it's kind of a follow-up to my question, but a little different.
All right.
One of my struggle is that when I do pastimes like yatra lectures or lectures pertaining to some particular event like Govardhan preparation or something, I have a hard time focusing on those lectures on audio. I can hear it often, like live, and when I'm in the class, it's not a challenge. But most of the audio lectures, I feel more focused in Srimad Bhagavatam or the series. But if like there's a break in the series, like you know, somebody say, oh, Govardhan is coming, so let's play some Govardhan lecture in order to prepare for that evening. And I feel like a little dissociated at that time. So I just need, like, is that the same answer to train our mind? Or
that's a good idea, to train the mind. but part of the training is there's variegatedness, and sometimes, but you know, it's always Krishna. And then, you know, go back and release the pause button after you paused. And go back and just reconnect where you left off something previously. Maybe that will help. So that the continuity may be interrupted but not broken. Your mother, you know, you're doing something and over there the child needs your attention, you just go give your attention because that's what, then you, when that's taken care of, you come back. You just resume. What do you think? Does that help?
It's a conscious effort. I feel like I know I have to consciously do it. Like, probably it's just a matter of training.
Yeah, controlling the mind. Yes.
I was wondering. It's kind of based on Lila Vikumata's question.
Look what you started.
I don't think it's directly related, but the thought came from the discussion. Why do certain things that may have, that some things that may inspire for some time, why does it change? Like I find that there are some phases in life where I'm really inspired by a certain thing to chant better. But then it fades away, like I don't have that inspiration doesn't help me chant better anymore. And it changes, it goes away. Or in related to this is, I find that sometimes our abilities or our confidence change. We may have strength.
Well, the second one is just unsteady bhakti, anishtita bhakti. And those, the cause for unsteady bhakti is the anartas, and there's different sources of those anartas, you just keep tracing back, and offenses against the holy name is the cause for the, you know, the anartas, in our practice at least, primarily. So the root, go at the root, and the root is eradicate, strive to eradicate the offenses in chanting, and steadiness will be the outcome instead of unsteadiness. That's the second part. Then the first part, something that seems to help me focus in my chanting, and then after some time the same thing doesn't focus, doesn't have the same effect of helping me focus. The answer given can be similarly applied. You know, that's our unsteadiness. It has to do with the covering, and material nature moves, and our disposition moves along with material nature. The mind is not controlled. The mind is not focused. So something comes along that inspires. Now we're attentive, and that's the time passes, and the mind has, the configuration has changed, and so it doesn't, you know. Doesn't mean that the impetus initially was material. It means the mind is still material, and that transcendental impetus doesn't act as it did during some particular point in time. So then, you know, there's different things what to do. One of the things what to do is you continue anyway. Or there can be a variety of impetuses that help focus, and you know, take another one and take another one and take another one.
Does it mean that there's a mistake in the process?
No, it's not a mistake in the process. The contamination that I'm covered by limits me. Doesn't mean that you've taken up the process or process in a wrong way. I'm just, you know, I'm influenced. Someone's calling me at 9 o'clock. Not 9 o'clock yet. There. I'll call him back. So it's the why and what to do. The why is, it's not you're applying yourself wrongly to the process. It's the limitations due to my coverings sometimes, the sine curve, sometimes and sometimes. So that unsteadiness is due to, as mentioned. So now what to do? Well, you continue with the process, and with the keep good association, and continue especially with hearing messages that are inspirational. And there may be something else, you know, a week from now that you resonate with particularly that helps you focus, and you do that for a while. There's nothing wrong with you, there's something wrong with the process. It's just you're dealing with the fact that you're in this unsteady stage of bhakti right now. Don't bang your head against the rocks. It's just bruise your head. Okay.
Attention follows intention. Attention follows intention.
Yes.
So what is the best intention?
Be very clear what your intention is.
Okay.
I mean, like, you know the meaning of sankalpa, right? So be very clear when you sit down to chant or hear or worship or, you know, live your life. Be very clear. And it's okay to refine and revisit and so forth your sankalpa for your chanting. It helps.
Is there any example?
Like, what's a good one? It's personal. It's really personal. It's not like, oh, I'll try that one out for a while. That doesn't fit me, let me try that one for a while. Or it looks nice, but doesn't feel so good. Anyway, it's something that comes from inside. It's not something you put on, like a garment or a cosmetic.
Any best intention that we can develop towards
Guru? Well, again, it's personal. You want me to take you to the clothes rack and see, you know, what's on the clothes rack over there and which one do I like? But I'm reluctant to do that. Something that's personal. And if you don't have an answer, then just keep asking the question. And then even after you have the answer, keep asking the question. Refine it. Because we're immature in our sense of what's important to me. What is it that I really want? What is it that I really value? If Krishna said to me what he said to, you know, different personalities, you please me very much, what is just whatever it is that you like, tell me what that is and it's yours. How would you answer that? And there may be great souls that say something that's way up there and it really inspires you and it's not going to endure. I simply want to be engaged in your devotional service. I chant with the intention of becoming pure. Just do the Chaita Dharpa Namarjanam part nicely. That's a good sankalpa. Let my heart become pure by this chanting, because Krishna is the supreme pure. See, you do your own editing. Don't ask me to edit for you.
I'm trying
to be clarified. And I'm trying to ask you to do your own inquiry. We have a stalemate here. I can say something, but it isn't going to have the same power as if you've asked the question yourself. Look in the mirror and say, you know, who am I and what's important to me? If you like the Hare Krishna mantra, then pray for eternal service, unmixed with anything other than just the desire to be in service. Okay? Last question.
Is logic and reason ultimately just persuasion? It's like impossible.
It's inconclusive.
Because Prabhupada is just one of the science.
We use it. We use it all the time. We should use it in Krishna's service, but it's subordinate to Shabda. Okay? I'm going to go answer my phone. Shiva Prabhupada.